From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross.
I'm not sure about this part where I say I want to be president for all Americans. I mean, do I? You know, all of them?
Sunday is the finale of Veep, the profane, satirical, political HBO sitcom about Selina Meyer, a vain, ambitious vice president who briefly became president. Today, we feature our interviews with showrunner David Mandel, who says the show took pride in being an equal opportunity offender.
When you're with Republicans, they assume, because she's kind of a screw-up, that she's a Democrat, and they're like, oh, that's the other guys. And when you're with Democrats, they're like, that's them.
We'll also hear from star Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who plays the ambitious politician.
Yeah! Oh, my God! That is so great for me!
And the country?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And Tony Hale, who plays her adoring personal assistant. That and more.
Okay, Leon?
Yeah?
I'm not sure about this part where I say I want to be president for all Americans. I mean, do I? You know, all of them?
How about real Americans?
Oh, yeah, that's good. And okay. Then we can figure out what I mean later.
This weekend, after 7 seasons and 17 Emmys so far, we say goodbye to HBO's Veep, the hilarious Beltway comedy starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Selina Meyer, an aggressively ambitious politician surrounded by sycophants, rivals, and power players. Today, we'll hear from Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the star of Veep, Tony Hale, who plays Gary, her overly obsequious assistant, and David Mandel, the Veep showrunner who has the task of shaping and landing these final episodes. Veep was created by Armando Iannucci and has Frank Rich as one of its executive producers, so it's no surprise that Veep, from the start, has been astoundingly smart about its political satire and characters. But what's been amazingly and increasingly satisfying about this show is just how fast and furiously its humor is delivered. The laughs per minute quota on Veep is off the charts. And the most truly democratic thing about Veep is that every character is capable of saying something hilarious at any time, and usually at warp speed, so you have to listen closely to catch it all. And the cast, a deep bench group that includes Gary Cole, Anna Chlumsky, Kevin Dunn, Timothy Simons, and Matt Walsh, is a delight no matter who's on screen or who's making fun of whom. When Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tony Hale share the screen as Selina and her do-anything adoring assistant Gary, there's a special type of comedy magic, as in this scene from the current final season.
God, I know what I want to say, but I can't find the words.
What if you talk and I type? How about that? You just say it out loud and then I'll just type
it. Okay, yeah, let's try that. Okay.
Great. Oh, this is fun.
Well, from the time I was a girl...
From the time I was a pretty girl.
No, not pretty girl.
No.
From the time I was a girl.
Oh, but you're so pretty.
I know. But anyway, I have fought.
Oh, good. Good.
Every day.
So good.
To make America.
A very good place.
Now, don't finish my sentences.
I thought that's where you're going.
You don't know where I'm going.
To the White House.
You know what I would like to tell people, but obviously I can't.
No, stay here.
I should be president.
Yep.
Because it is my goddamn turn. I was the game changer.
Yep.
I took a dump on the glass ceiling, and I shaved my muff in the sink of the old boys' club.
Muff.
But for 3 years, Hughes kept me chained to a radiator in some basement in Cleveland. Mm. So as far as I'm concerned, America owes me an 8-year stay in the White House, and this time I want a war.
Yes. Do you mean to read that back?
Oh, we can't use any of that.
Oh.
I mean, it sounds like I'm shouting from a balcony in Munich.
Like a Vita.
That's a scene from the current and final season of Veep, the HBO comedy series satirizing presidential politics. Our first guest today, Veep showrunner David Mandel, is a writer, director, and executive producer of the show. Season 5 was his first running Veep. He took over from British writer-director Armando Iannucci. Mandel formerly wrote for Saturday Night Live, Seinfeld, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. On screen, there have been some transfers of power as well. Selina Meyer began the series as vice president, hence the title, but in season 4, the president resigned and Meyer took over. Hoping to stay in the role she inherited, she ran for president in the next election. Season 4 ended in an electoral college tie. Terry Gross spoke to David Mandel in 2016. That was during season 5, which focused on the behind-the-scenes calculations and backstabbing as Meyer and her staff tried to win a recount in Nevada and a congressional vote to break the Electoral College tie. There's a moment where it seems that as a result of arcane rules, her vice presidential running mate, Tom James, may be named president. And although he's become Meyer's rival, she would want a job in his administration. Tom James is played by Hugh Laurie.
So, Tom, let's be real. You're going to be an accidental president.
Pot kettle.
I'm here to offer my help in making this transition of power as smooth as possible by joining your administration.
Well, strangely enough, I was thinking along the same lines.
Okay, fantastic. I'll tell you what I want. I want Secretary of State, because I think that's the least you can do.
I was thinking Vice President.
That's literally the least you can do. And I really want Secretary of State.
Vice President.
Come on. Secretary of State.
Vice President Meyer's got a nice familiar ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
Vice President, take it or leave it.
I wouldn't be your Veep if there were a grassy knoll full of Jodie Foster fans in the front row at your inauguration.
That's a clip from Veep. David Mendel, welcome to Fresh Air.
And thank you very much. And congratulations on finding a clip from Veep that you can actually play on the air legally without getting fined
there
by the FCC.
There is so much cursing. There's so much incredibly creative cursing and insulting on your show.
We try.
So, you know, do you think vice presidential candidates and vice presidents consider that to be a really bad job?
I don't think anybody loves the job. I think there's a long history of people really, really not liking the job. And I think even when they think they like the job, like I bet there were a couple of years in there where Al Gore was sort of thinking to himself, this is a pretty good job. We're getting along great. This guy lets me do a lot of stuff. And then one day it was like, oh, God. Monica Lewinsky. Oh, God, now I'm running. Oh, God, now. And starts to reevaluate what he thought he liked about it. It's a thankless task.
Dick Cheney seemed to have a lot of power in the job.
Yeah, but he didn't seem happy. Maybe that's just him.
Maybe he never seems happy.
I don't know. Maybe that was smiling for him and it was just really creepy. I don't know.
So when you took over as the showrunner of season 5, there was a crazy cliffhanger from season 4, which I can't even begin to explain. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to throw the ball to you and ask you about the political cliffhanger.
Season 4, which was kind of part of the reason I took the job, by the way, and I'll loop back to that in a second. But basically, Armando and his team ended the season with Selena running for president against the opposite party by a candidate, a senator by the name of Bill O'Brien. And so it was her and her vice presidential nominee, Tom James, versus O'Brien and his vice presidential nominee, Montez. And basically, it ended in a statistically possible but never happened since the 1800s, an electoral college tie, which basically meant that the election would be decided by the House of Representatives. The sort of wonderful corner that Armando kind of wrote the show into, for me, creatively, it was sort of, you know, it's pretty good to be asked to come in and take over Veep. That's pretty good on any day. But then sort of this puzzle was sort of the added lore, at least to me. So I was very excited about it.
So let's hear how the scene actually sounded when it played out on TV. And this is Selena Meyer's staff trying to figure out what happens if the election ends in a tie in the electoral vote, as it looks like it's about to do. So they all go on to Google, basically, to see what they're supposed to do, like what happens next, what the protocol is. So here's the scene from Veep.
It's the 12th Amendment.
I have 20th Amendment.
What? Why are there so many amendments? Get it right the first time, people.
It's actually both. 12th is superseded by the 20th. They give the House until January 20th to elect the president.
Each state gets one vote. First candidate to 26 is the new president, and the Senate chooses the VP.
Well, it's a close election with a ton of House races too close to call. What happens if it's a tie in the House?
Right.
Is it a dance-off?
Well, vice president-elect becomes president. Whoever the Senate has picked for VP will be president.
Wait, that means
that, Tom,
What?
Could be the president.
I had literally no idea. I mean, it's good to be prepared.
Wait, so you mean that I might lose this election to my vice president?
Season was, and then once I know where I'm going, then I can kind of, you know, get there in an interesting way. And definitely some of the path of how we got there changed, especially when I, you know, was able to put together a writing team and we were able to add even more stuff. But very initially, I guess the easiest way of putting it is I had decided for myself that she needed to lose the election. I felt that the thing that Selina Meyer wants most on all the world is to be elected president of the United States. She was president for a year, but she was not elected. That was the thing that meant the most to her. And I sort of felt like the character would be ruined if the character got what she wanted. And then I started to figure out, well, who should she lose to? And the obvious answer initially was, you know, to Tom James. She should be her vice president's vice president. That's the most insulting thing. And this man who, you know, she sort of had this sort of interesting past with. And I think Julia, as an actress, responds to the more we can kind of dump on her. And I started to think to myself that even worse than losing to your own vice president would be losing to another woman, so that another woman would become the first elected president of the United States, even though elected in this crazy situation. And once I kind of locked in on the idea that that was the worst thing that could happen to Selena, I kind of knew where I was going. And then the rest of it was just sort of filling in the journey.
So the vice president termed president, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, not only doesn't get along with her daughter, she never got along with her mother. And in this past season, her mother was gravely ill, on life support, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus was called to the bedside to decide whether they should take her off life support or what they should do. And she's kind of torn up about it, you know, tormented about what the right choice is, but really she's thinking about the recount that's going on and what's going to happen with the presidential election, because her ability to stay as president hangs in the balance. And so as she is worried about her mother being gravely ill and what's happening with the recount, her aide, played by Gary Cole, his name in the series is Kent Davidson, takes her aside for a private talk. Let's play that scene.
I don't know if this provides any solace, but ever since your mother's health setback was announced, there has been an outpouring of support that has driven up your favorables.
I'm talking about pulling the plug on my mother here. How's a half a percentage point in the polls supposed to sweeten that biscuit?
More like double digits.
Really?
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
But just out of curiosity, if I were to, you know, would that end?
There is a possibility of a shorter-lived but numerically greater outpouring. If you will, a death bump.
Really?
Really.
Was it your idea to come up with the expression a death bump?
I believe that was the writer's. Death bump was their terminology, but I'll take a little credit in the sense of this was something I definitely wanted to do this season, which was dig into who these people were a little bit, that this very personal thing with this mother who she's not sort of close to would come up, and that she would be very much not caring and yet caring.
So in Veep, there's a character named Jonah who's not very bright, who's been an aide, but this past season, he runs for Congress and makes one gaffe after another. And he's using, without permission, the Tom Petty song, I Won't Back Down, as
Correct.
His campaign theme. And then Tom Petty gets in touch saying, I didn't authorize this. I do not want to be associated with your campaign. You cannot use
my song. I was just going to say, they had a number of cease and desists, including a couple of preemptive notes from other artists saying, in case you're thinking of using our music, don't use our music. Yes.
I love that, because that happens so much now, that a candidate will, you know, appropriate a piece of music, and then the artist who made it will go like, no, you don't. I hate your campaign and everything you stand for.
You know, we did a line with Selena where when she was in her mother's hospital room and she's hearing this Tim McGraw song that is Meemaw, that's her mother's favorite song, and she's hearing it and she sort of says something along the lines of, the election's over. I don't have to pretend to like country music anymore. Sometimes with these campaign songs, I just wish they would play a song they actually listen to and like. And by the way, I will also point out, we actually had to ask Tom Petty if it was okay that we used the song For Jonah, version of the world sort of meeting, reality meeting fiction.
So you started your TV writing career on Seinfeld.
No, actually, my first job, oddly enough, out of college was at Comedy Central. When Al Franken in 1992 hosted comedy coverage of the Democratic and Republican convention, it was called Indecision 92. So that was my actually first real job. And then from there, at the end of that summer, after we'd covered the two conventions, which was really fun, Al put in a word for me at Saturday Night Live. So really, I guess my first year-long job was I was at Saturday Night Live for 3 years and then moved to Seinfeld.
So doing a comic take on the Republican and Democratic convention sounds like great training for doing Veep.
Yes, no, it was amazing training. And by the way, also Saturday Night Live, one of the things, and I was a lifelong fan of the show, but then working at Saturday Night Live and working with Al Franken, some of my favorite stuff that we ever got to do was the political stuff. Back in, I guess it would have been 93, right before the inauguration, Al and I wrote a sketch that still puts a smile on my face, which was Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton. Remember when Clinton was jogging everywhere in D.C. before the inauguration, and he kind of ran into it was him, Clinton, into McDonald's, and then explaining the Somalia situation by eating food off people's plates and explaining the warlords and stuff. So doing the political stuff was just a blast and a half on Saturday Night Live. And, it's different because it was a little bit more timely, a little bit more parody. Obviously, you're doing the real life characters, but yeah, all amazing training for this Veep thing that I didn't know was coming in some ways.
So, having worked with Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Seinfeld and now working with her on Veep, do you see.
And Curb, by the way.
Right,
we did the season of the Seinfeld reunion on Curb, so that was fun too.
Right. But watching her play a really different character than Elaine on Seinfeld.
Yep.
Do you see things that she's capable of that you wouldn't even necessarily have known about from Seinfeld?
She was brilliant as Elaine on Seinfeld. I mean, there's just no question about it. And I always sort of say she just sort of ruined actresses for me. My partners, Jeff Alec and I, even when we were sort of making our little Eurotrip teen comedy, there were moments when we would talk to, one of our actresses on there, and we would basically steal like one of Julia's moves and sort of teach it to them. Like, do it like this. That's how Julia Louis-Dreyfus would do it. I think the Elaine character was obviously brilliant. I think the fun of with Selena perhaps a little more is that, just like we can stretch her into these sort of new depths of behavior. How horrible can she be? Where is that line? What would she do? How embarrassed can we get her that we kind of relish in? I mean, it's sort of, half the, it's like, what's the reason to kill, Selena's mother? Well, it's to see how Julia will react to that. Do you know what I mean? So the scene, for example, in that episode where she actually does ultimately pull the plug and her mother dies in front of her, and then she gets the news that they won a hearing in Nevada, so the vote count's going to go ahead and she has a chance now to win Nevada, where she gets really excited by the news, and then her daughter comes in and she has to tell her daughter, your grandmother's dead, but also good news from Nevada. I could watch Julia do that on a loop 24 hours a day for the rest of my life. It was so uncomfortable and oddly sad and yet hilarious all at the same time. And there's just nobody on earth that can do all of that at once. And she just wows me regularly. And by the way, it just inspires me as a writer, because then I start to think like, well, what next? And that, what can I do to her next in a good way?
David Mandel, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Really fun.
David Mandel speaking to Terry Gross in 2016. He's the showrunner and executive producer of HBO's Veep, which concludes its run on HBO this Sunday.
Okay. No. She's gone, Madam President. Okay. My condolences.
Can I just have a moment?
Yes, with, of course, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, why don't you check your phones? Sounds like you shoplifted a bunch of vibrators.
The Nevada State Supreme Court issued a temporary stay of certification. The count will continue.
My prayer works!
Yes. Maybe! Wow. Maybe!
You wanted help from above. Here it is.
Yeah. It's fantastic!
What's going on? What's everyone cheering about? Is Mima better?
Catherine! I thought you were here.
No, I went to get coffee. I asked you if you wanted anything.
No, I didn't hear you say that.
Wait, she's gone? You pulled the plug without me?
It wasn't a plug. It was a ventilator tube that they just...
Ooh. Oh, darling. Oh, honey. No. Mima didn't know you weren't here, honey. She's brain dead. Baby doll, she was brain dead. We got good news. About Nevada.
Wait, what?
We got good news from Nevada.
Mom?
I'm gonna step outside.
Okay.
After a break, we'll hear from two of the stars of Veep, Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tony Hale. And jazz critic Kevin Whitehead will review the new movie Bolden. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
This message comes from NPR sponsor E-Trade. Investing your money shouldn't require moving mountains. No matter how much or how little experience you have, E-Trade makes investing simple. Along with great value, they provide the tools and support you need to navigate the markets, all to help your money work hard for you. For more information, visit etrade.com/NPR. E-Trade Securities, LLC. Member SIPC.
We continue our salute to Veep, the HBO comedy series that presents its final episode this Sunday, by revisiting a Fresh Air interview with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who stars as ambitious politician Selina Meyer. Veep has won 17 Emmys to date, and 6 of those were earned by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies spoke to the actress in 2012 when Veep began. Here's a scene from that first season. The vice president, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, has discovered an opening in her schedule she wants to fill. Her staff members are played by Anna Klumsky, Matt Walsh, and Reed Scott.
Come on, let's go somewhere. Let's meet the public.
You want to normalize it?
Yes, exactly. I want to meet some regular normals. Where are we going to find them?
Photo op at the normals and the normalistas.
Yes, there's a book fair Adams
no.
Morgan.
What kind of book? You're not going to get a good photo holding a book. You need something active.
It's like kids read or something. Like read.
Kids are unpredictable. They wet their pants.
Keep it simple.
Not
it's
good.
Ma'am, frozen yogurt. All right, is huge in this town right now. All right, it's hot out. Let's go to a store. There's one that I know that I go to all the time on U Street. It's owned by 3 generations of African Americans. I mean, there's a narrative
done.
Built right in.
Excellent.
Home
it's
run.
Perfect. Done deal.
Great.
We can totally normalize with those guys. That's what we're gonna do. Make it happen, guys.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Or should I say, welcome back, Madam Vice President?
I've gotten very used to being called that. It's rather peculiar.
Yeah, a little heady. Your character is she's the vice president. We don't learn what political party your character, Selina Meyer, is. Not that much about her political career and kind of inherently has ambitions that maybe exceed her talents. But she can't be a fool either. I mean, nobody who gets to be vice president doesn't have something on the ball and some accomplishments. I wonder, as you developed this, was there sort of a sweet spot you had to find between someone who is competent but maybe not too competent and kind of neurotic?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, buffoonery is funny, let's face it. And you'll see her behave competently in certain situations. But she's betwixt and between, you know. She's in a powerful position and yet she's powerless at the same time. And I play it as if that circumstance has a way of paralyzing her. So that's how I sort of justify maybe certain so-called hiccups that she has. You know, her agenda is often clashing with the agenda of the president. And how does one survive under those circumstances? It's a mess. And if it weren't a mess, it wouldn't be funny, of course. So, you know, we keep it messy.
I thought we'd listen to another clip. In this scene, you have just, as the vice president, have just met with a senator who you're trying to get to support a bill that you're backing, and it kind of didn't go as planned, and you've just come back from the meeting and mm-hmm. are kind of confessing what happened to your staff. The staff members here are played by Reed Scott, Anna Klumsky, and Matt Walsh, and you speak first. Let's listen.
Hey, I think I did the right thing, but I just need you to confirm that I did the right thing. I said something to someone.
What exactly did you say, ma'am, and to who?
To whom?
Senator Doyle said that he would sponsor the bill.
Oh.
If we keep oil off of clean jobs. And there was an implication, perhaps.
You didn't say yes.
No, I didn't say yes. I said, yeah.
Okay, well, we told oil we'd put one of their guys on clean jobs. That's why we got away with the cutler tweet.
I know.
Okay.
She's aware. Okay, I was charmed by Doyle. He's got that little twinkle in his eye. He just niced me. I got nice. All right? And where were you, Amy, by the way? Where were you?
No, you said you had it covered.
No, I didn't have it covered. And it's your job to know that if I say I have it covered, I don't have it covered, and you cover me. I need you all to make me have not said that. I need you to have make me unsaid it.
That is our guest, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I mean, very, very funny scene.
Thanks.
You could imagine this character as a senator when she had her own base of power and kind of more sure where she was, handling a negotiation with another senator well. But here, she's kind of undermined by her position and gets frantic and does stupid things.
Exactly. In fact, in the first episode, when she has a meeting with Senator Hallows, she comes in and she says, Barbara, what have I been missing here? And Senator Hallows says, power. When she says that, I sort of played it like it was like a punch to the gut, because she's sort of speaking the truth, and that throws Selena off her game for the rest of that scene. As a result, she's sort of struggling to get her balance back, and she doesn't quite recover it.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus speaking to Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies in 2012. After a break, another cast member of Veep, actor Tony Hale. This is Fresh Air.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Every day, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. But none of that is possible without the right people. People who get packages to over 150 million delivery points affordably and on time with the latest technology and expertise. Who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why they deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone in the country at usps.com/future.
About 10 minutes. That is all we need to get you started every morning. The biggest news stories, from politics to pop culture, with the analysis you need to understand what's happening. Listen to Up First, weekdays from NPR News.
Tony Hale has won 2 Emmy Awards for his performance on HBO's comedy series Veep. He plays Gary Walsh, the personal aide to Selina Meyer, the vice president. Hale also co-starred in Arrested Development as Buster, the youngest of the Bluth siblings. On Veep, Gary, who's been with Selina for years, remains loyal to her. He worships her and fawns over her. He carries her oversized handbag, nicknamed Leviathan, which contained the nuclear codes when she was briefly the president. He's always standing right behind her, reminding her of the names of the people she's greeting and suggesting things she might say to them. He even chooses clothes for her. Terry Gross spoke to Tony Hale in 2016. In this scene from season 5, Selena's mother is in the hospital and is critically ill. But all Selena can think about is the recount in Nevada. In order to have a quiet space, Selena, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Gary go to the hospital chapel.
Do you pray?
A lot.
What do you pray for?
You know. You maybe want to try it?
Sure. You know, what the hell? We're here, right?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
God,
God, it's me, Selena.
Oh, Lord God, it's me, Selena. Grant me wisdom and strength.
Give us your comforting presence.
I've got it now. I've got it. Lord God, please ease my mother's pain and suffering.
Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord.
Ease her passing. Ease it all. Ease it down the Lord, Let her daughter, thy humble servant, be the first woman elected president of the United States. Please, this is so much to bear.
Oh, it is, Lord, it is.
Hear my prayer.
Hear her prayer.
Lift me up.
Lift me up.
Heel is stuck in this thing.
Yeah, I got it. Tony Hale, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me ask you to describe your character of Gary.
Oh, sweet Gary. Gary has been with the president for many, many years, and he's what's called a body man. And what he does is he pretty much carries around a bag and anything she needs, like it could be Purell or pens or her speech or other things, is in this bag. And so he's always by her side. And typically, before we started the shooting the pilot, we were able to meet people who had done this role just to kind of find out about their life. And I met a guy who was a body man. And he did it in his 20s, and he did it for a couple of years and then burned out and moved on to other stuff. My character has done it into his 40s because he has no identity outside of Selena Meyer, and he worships her. She is so verbally abusive to him, but he doesn't hear it. He just bounces back like, you know, some kind of domestic abuse situation, and he is perfectly content where he is.
So the handbag, which has been nicknamed the Leviathan, now has the nuclear code mm-hmm. in it, as well as things like tampons.
Very important.
So one of the things your character has to do is whisper in Selena's ear what she needs to know about each person that she's meeting and what she needs to say. Like when she says to a congressman, "Oh, and this must be your wife," you whisper in her ear, "That's not his wife, it's a prostitute."
Yeah. That's not his wife. And there was another time where she said, she was talking to somebody and she said to another guy, "How is your wife?" And I said, "He's divorced." And so she has to quickly turn it into some other topic. The thing about Gary that's is fun to play is he knows nothing about politics. Doesn't care to know about politics, doesn't know, but he knows these random factoids about people. And so he'll just whisper in her ear just like, you know, I don't know, his daughter's in rehab or he likes eclairs or he's a fan of Britney Spears or something just random so that she can have these conversation pieces, which are probably not good conversation pieces to have, but he thinks so.
So your character hardly talks. He's usually just like whispering lines to Selena. Yeah. So what does your script look like? When you get your script, does it say, "Gary, parentheses, looks pained. Gary, parentheses, winces. Gary, parentheses, looks confused." Like what, because you don't always have lines, but you're on camera a lot and you're conveying a lot through your facial expressions and your body posture.
I mean, they give me kind of a lot of fun lines and tidbits to play with and to kind of react off of her. However, there's times, because which is very special to this show that I've never experienced before, they do give us this 2 weeks of rehearsal time before we shoot. And so in that time, since I'm always standing behind her, I can kind of play with, you know, how would I react to that or make odd noises. I mean, Gary's like big on like all of a sudden he'll just go, he just makes these really awkward noises behind her, which I'm sure is so annoying. But so it's fun to kind of play with that and just to kind of have that life behind her.
So although your character doesn't have much dialogue because he's mostly just like reacting and giving her little verbal cues, there is a very famous scene in which you and Selena have a big fight. And this soon after the president resigns and Selena becomes president, you start to assert your new power by doing things you believe are right, but probably aren't. For instance, there's a painting she doesn't like, so you have it removed from the White House, mm-hmm. but it turns out to be the only painting in the White House by a Native American.
Yeah.
And that becomes this like huge issue and a big PR crisis. Then you also spend way too much money on the first state dinner, which also mm-hmm. becomes a big PR crisis because she's accused of overspending. And when Selena finds out that you're the person behind these disasters, she's furious with you and she goes to find you and you're kind of trying to hide from her.
Come out of there.
Ma'am, if you'll just let me explain.
Come out here now. Who do you think you are? Gary Antoinette? Did somebody make you first lady? Because I don't remember marrying you, Gary. I don't remember
you in Niagara Falls. I think I remember that.
Ma'am, I'm really sorry for the painting, and I'm really sorry for the spending, but you have to understand.
Oh, shut up. Just shut up. You are unimportant, okay? And you have suckered on to me like some sort of a car window Garfield.
That is not true, ma'am.
You think you're some sort of a big shot here? Oh, my God, you are not a big shot, Gary. You're a middle-aged man who sanitizes my tweezers. God.
You're wrong.
Excuse me?
When's Catherine's birthday?
June 8th.
9th.
9th.
Which senator's daughter's in rehab?
You're out of line, Missy.
Gildray, what are you wearing tomorrow?
I don't know.
I do. I'm your calendar. I'm your Google. I'm your Wilson the volleyball.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
I have broken my body for you.
Oh, come on.
I have let myself be laughed at. I have let myself be humiliated. And I'm happy to do it.
Okay.
Most of the time, you don't even know that I exist. But I have everything to you.
Oh, I am so happy to get somebody else to give me my hand cream.
Okay, go.
Yeah.
Can you find somebody else who did what I did?
You mean on Labor Day?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did. You just did. You just said Labor Day.
I said I would never mention that, ever.
Oh, God. Okay, look, I'm sorry if I lost my temper a little bit.
I am so sorry for the words that I just spoke.
So what happened on Labor Day? Do you know?
Oh, man, I don't know, but I am dying to find out, man. I mean, there's something fun to not knowing just because it's got to be something really dark.
Yeah.
Because I've done some dark things for her. I've dug out stuff in the trash for her. I've broken up with boyfriends for her. She told me, I think it was season one, where she's like, I need you to break up with this guy for me. And I was like, I'm on it. So, I mean, I've done a lot of weird stuff, but something happened on Labor Day, man, that takes it. Like, it's got to be really dark.
Hey, you've walked in on the president and the vice president having sex.
Yes,
I don't know what you're going to be doing with that information.
Which was like walking in on mom and dad having sex. That was a rough day for Gary. That was a rough one.
Tony Hale speaking to Terry Gross in 2016. He's won two Emmys for his role in HBO's Veep, which is ending its 7-season run this weekend. After a break, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews the new movie Bolden, and we'll have a special poetry reading for Mother's Day. This is Fresh Air.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Mayo Clinic. When you're looking for advice you and your family can trust, and you want support from people who can give you the certainty you need, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. Find out more at mayoclinic.org/answers.
What would you do if you found out a story that had shaped your identity was a lie? NPR's new podcast, White Lies, investigates a murder in Selma, Alabama from 1965.
And exposes the conspiracy that kept it unsolved. Until now. White Lies. Start listening Tuesday.
The new film Bolden tells the story of the legendary early jazz band leader Buddy Bolden. He's portrayed by Gary Carr, whose other roles include playing a mildly jazzy singer on Downton Abbey and a menacing pimp on HBO's The Deuce. Our jazz critic, Kevin Whitehead, keeps a close eye on jazz movies and has this review.
Charles Buddy Bolden was the original jazz hero. A New Orleans cornet player at the turn of the last century, the African-American Bolden was famous for playing loud and earthy blues, his shirt open to expose a red flannel undershirt. Some called him King Bolden. He captivated women and eventually cracked up, spending the last 24 years of his life in a mental hospital. Bolden was jazz's first mythic figure, who burned so bright he burned himself out. Decades later, jazz researchers heard a lot of hearsay about him, which they duly repeated as fact, including stories later discredited. He hadn't, for example, parachuted out of a hot air balloon as a promotional stunt. Director Dan Pritzker's film Bolden freely mixes fact and myth. In the movie, Buddy does jump from that balloon, and it makes up still more stuff. The frame story leaves plenty of room for riffing on the bare facts. In 1931, an older and addled Buddy thinks back on and tries to piece together his old glory days. It's a life seen in fragments, shifting back and forth between Buddy's dark present and brilliant past. Within 1931, it shifts between Buddy's gloomy hospital ward and a bright New Orleans ballroom. There, Louis Armstrong is doing a live broadcast, which Bolden overhears on a nurse's radio. Louis is well impersonated by Reno Wilson. His growl, is one more ghostly voice in Buddy's head. Bolden is a movie of striking set pieces. There's that hot air balloon sequence, and a dreamlike factory where young Buddy hears his first glimmering of syncopation and where seamstresses dance like ballerinas. We see Buddy teaches men the interlocking rhythms that fuel his conversational music, and there's a fantasy duet between Bolden and Armstrong across time, like a jazz riff on The Lake House. The glittering fragments mirror the long, intermittent production of the film, starting back in 2007 with a different cast. Much as the action cross-cuts and leaps across time and space, it's easy to track. Shallow focus cinematography, with crisp images sliding into a blur in the same frame, evokes Buddy's struggle to hold on to reality, even as it leads the viewer's eye. It's very stylish, and there's lots of reasonably authentic early jazz. Since the real Bolden made no records, musicians and critics imagine his style according to taste. Musician Pops Foster, who'd heard him, said, "He played nothing but blues and all that stink music, and he played it very loud." But Bolden could play sweet, too. In the film, his cornet sound is supplied by Wynton Marsalis, and Movie Buddy is more virtuoso than battering ram. More like Wynton. When an upstart horn player challenges him, Buddy brushes him back with sheer technique. The first time white listeners hear him, they literally come running, primed by good promotion. Women are drawn to him. He keeps seeing the same beautiful faces in the crowd. A personal muse turns up everywhere. Bolden's played by English actor Gary Carr, who brought disturbing intensity to the pimp Cece on HBO's The Deuce. But off the bandstand, Carr's Buddy is a curiously muted figure. Even his red undershirt is toned down, tasteful, like something from The Gap. Bolden doesn't control his destiny. His increasingly demanding manager puts him in front of white audiences where he has to restrain himself, making his jazz even more urgent back home at Funky Butt Hall. That manager ultimately answers to the man at the top of the local racist food chain, an imperious and windy judge, a part made to order for Ian McShane. He finally reaches down to confront Buddy himself.
You come from nothing.
I come from the same place as you.
There is nothing the same for you and me, and that ain't never gonna change. You come from nothing, raise your head, get people together like you some kind of... You think we gonna let that happen, Let you incite a godless crowd?
Don't like what I play, don't listen.
No one ever will.
As in life, Bolden's mental collapse is fairly abrupt, and Bolden the movie loses its grip in the last act. The judge's minions flood the black community with dope decades too early. In 1906, when Bolden went mad, you could buy heroin at the pharmacy. And Buddy's freedom music is deemed a threat to the white power structure, which is taking poetic license pretty far. In reality, there's no evidence white New Orleans ever heard King Bolden or noticed he existed. His music never made the papers. Having Movie Bolden get crushed by larger political forces unwittingly diminishes the man. It turns the king into a pawn in his own story.
Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviewed the movie Bolden. His book about jazz movies, titled Play the Way You Feel, is due out next year. We'll end today's show with a poem. Our classical music critic, Lloyd Schwartz, is also a poet. Last month, he received a Guggenheim Fellowship in poetry. He's also the poet laureate of his town, Somerville, Massachusetts. Sunday is Mother's Day, so we thought it would be nice to hear him read a poem about his late mother, who had Alzheimer's disease. It's the title poem from his latest collection, which is called Little Kisses.
My mother is mad at the sun. She hates the daylight, one more new day. In a nursing home, stuck in a wheelchair, she thinks she's been abandoned. In the background, a woman's nonstop wail, My mother can barely hear me on the phone. She doesn't know she's speaking to her son. I have to tell her she's speaking to her son. Oh, then I'm not alone. I have a son. Please, don't forget that. How could I forget that? And you, who are you? Are we related? Of course. Are you my father? Don't you remember your father? Are you my brother? You're my mother. I'm your mother? Of course. Was I a good mother? You were, you are, a wonderful mother. I'm glad you're my son. What's your name? You don't remember? I can't think of it. I'm all mixed up. Are we related? You're my mother. Did I ask you that before? Yes. Are you angry? Why should I be angry? Because I'm so stupid. What lovely flowers, the nurse says. Did your son bring them? Who? Your son. Isn't this your son? He's my friend. I can't stop myself. Where is your son? Where's my son? What do you mean? Where is your son now? He's dead. Mrs. Schwartz, your son is on the phone. My son? Yes, say hello. Hello? Hello, how are you feeling? Much better, thank you. Why did you call? I call you every day. Forgive me, darling. I didn't remember. Well, hello. How did you know I was here? This is my son, isn't that right? You're my son, aren't you? You came out of my body. I'm your mother. Isn't that right? Isn't he handsome, even if he has a beard? I'm your mother. I'd love you no matter what you looked like. Wouldn't I? Give me a little kiss, will ya, huh? What are you gonna miss, will ya, huh? Gosh, oh gee, why do you refuse? I can't see what you're gonna lose. So give me a little kiss, will ya, huh? And I'll give it right back to you. See, I know all the words. I probably won't remember them tomorrow.
Lloyd Schwartz teaches in the Creative Writing MFA program at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He did a reading from his latest book of poems, which is called Little Kisses. On Monday's show, British actor and writer Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who starred in and created the comedy series Fleabag and wrote and created the first season of Killing Eve, which has just won a Peabody. Hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Our associate producer for digital media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bean Cooley.